you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on Live Paranormal. We're at liveparanormal.com, raisingthevibrationradio.com. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister, and I'm a 26-year talk radio host. You can find out everything you need to know about me at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. And, of course, the nonprofit that I founded in 2016, and this is an outreach for, at RaisingTheVibration.org. It's a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. And here on Raising the Vibration, we talk a lot about those four words, also trying to encourage you to evolve and ascend and inspire, and of course, again, I will say love, because love is really all there is. And in crazy times like this, we sort of have to fall back on love to show us the way. And I believe everything is love. I believe spirit is love. I believe the one true religion is love. I'm all about the love. So here's what happens on the show every week. I gather folks that I love and adore, who I really believe have devoted their lives to their passion, to their purpose, to their service, and who really understand how important it is to raise the vibration to their communities. We're all in this together, my friends. And if each one of us just puts a little bit of effort in to sort of to lift ourselves up, to lift our essence up, spiritually, emotionally, physically, inspire those around us to do the same, starting with our tribes and branching out into our communities and out from there, then the whole of the planet, the vibration of the everything, will be raised. And what a wonderful world that would be to live in without all the kind of lower vibrational minutiae we deal with every day. So my guest today is certainly no exception to any of those things. She's a wonderfully talented psychic medium. She's a speaker and an author and just a fantastic, inspirational person to know. Please welcome to Raising the Vibration my wonderful friend, Michelle Bellanger. How are you, my friend? It's great to hear from you.
Hey, good to be here. Glad you had me back.
Is this the first time you've been on this show? I know that you've been, because I know that you were on Haunted Playground and my daily show when I was at my old radio affiliate so many times, but have you done this show with me?
I'm not sure. I think maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, in the before times.
In the beginning, when it was a baby show. Maybe. I know, because yeah, I know that you're one of those people that I always turn to for inspiration. So I'm sure you were on the short list when I started the show in 2017.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure like one of the first times that you started it out, but it's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have you back. And isn't it so important during this time of quarantine and pandemic that we find a way to raise our vibration? Because I think just working up against those two things naturally has a tendency to try to pull you down, right?
Well, the times that we're in right now, it's a struggle for a lot of people. But if you give in to the negativity and you let it like really crush you, it just ends up in this sort of spiral, especially if you're sensitive, if you're psychic at all. There's so much emotion coming from other people, stress, just sort of the angst of the collective unconscious that we really need to work on trying to make sure that we stay as strong in ourselves as possible.
Yeah, it's so very important, exactly that. And I think that just that idea of collective unconscious, I was talking about this during my spiritual service. I do an interfaith service at the second Saturday of every month. If folks are interested, it's at SaturdayNightSpiritual.com. And I was talking about all of us going through this at the same time, this pandemic. And I think we talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago when you were on Haunted Playground with me here, which is my Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific show here at Live Paranormal. That I believe the message from spirit in the pandemic is for all of us to have the experience at the same time, the same experience, so we can realize that we are more alike than we are different, and that we really are one human family, and we're in this together. in part of my service on Saturday, I was talking about the collective unconscious of elephants. I love elephants. I collect elephants. I believe I was an elephant at least once. You know, if an elephant in Africa is hurting, an elephant in India knows about it. If they have the ability to do that, we have the ability to do that. But we have somewhere along the way socialized and culturalized ourselves out of the ability to do that. And boy, this world would be a different place if we could all feel each other's stuff, right?
I think if we did it consciously, because I think that we still feel it, but we've managed to tune it out and distract ourselves and redirect our awareness. And in many ways, the culture that we've been raised in has taught us to ignore that. Not only to ignore it, but like when those feelings surface, that they're false, they're misleading, they're superstition and a sign of a weak, gullible mind, and you shouldn't pay attention to that. You should be this hyper-rational, focused on material things being that I think cuts away a whole half of who and what we are.
I completely agree. Right, that we should always default to our brain, right, to our little monkey brain that chatters at us and tells us things that aren't true. Whenever you are in a weird place, right, or you're in a bad place or hard time, or you're insecure, you're scared, human beings will often tell you, well, think about it, figure it out, use your brain. Maybe that's not necessarily the answer. Maybe more the answer is use your soul, use your heart, and then use your brain as a tool to implement the thinking process. Because if you always default to your three-dimensional self, then you get trapped within the confines of three-dimensional thinking. And that's when the monkey brain chatter tells you, well, that person's not like you, or that guy going through this isn't like you, or boy, for people in my pandemic is very different. Well, you know, and then the us and them begins. And I think the us and them mentality is really the fall of humanity over and over and over again. Would you agree?
It's our greatest delusion. It really is. Like we, nationalism and trying to separate ourselves based on religious belief or skin color, or gender identity, any kind of superficial appearance, all of that is just this false, it's this mask that we're taught to believe in. Usually for political reasons, like nationalism is politicizing our sense of being separate from others so that you can have a them to struggle against, you can have a them to blame.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. And I think we do it all the time, right, with animals. So we have an excuse to not feel the things we're supposed to feel for animals and feel those things for humans instead. We create religious ridiculosity about, well, animals just die and then they just rot in the ground, but we have a soul and we're so evolved. And it's like, wow, have you ever spent time with an animal companion? Because they are so much farther along spiritually than we are, because they have learned, they have trusted their souls and their spiritual self and their unconscious self forever. You know, we spend years and years and years in workshops and churches and couch at a psychologist trying to get to the place that they already are, because they never talk themselves out of that, you know?
Yeah. So I've got three cats, as you know, but the audience here might not. And cats are the universe's way of teaching us mindfulness.
I agree.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm caught in the endless scroll on social media, just too distracted by all the other work that I'm doing, my cat Bliss, who is named intentionally for Follow Your Bliss, will raise her tiny little voice and lash her tail and pop herself right on my lap and not move until I have sat still for a little while and just existed in that moment of unconditional love.
Yeah. It's odd because we're fostering some kittens right now, bottle feeding, and my girlfriend's daughter named one of them Bliss, the little girl. And last night we lost one of the little boys, and it's I know, it happens. Yeah. Kittens go. The little ones don't always make it. I know, But man, when you're holding a little tiny thing that weighs like 5 ounces, and it's basically telling you, it's okay, it's my time, you realize,
yeah,
like how,
like,
right, it's not the kicking and screaming and the why, it's just, hey, you know what, my body's failing, I'm just going to drift away, it's all right. You realize where they're at with being in tune and plugged into their spirituality and where we're at, you know? And I think that if we just, we don't have to do anything, right, Michelle, except just get out of our own way. That's really all we have to do. Everything else is, you know, spirit designs the plan and we're supposed to just move along. We're supposed to get in the canoe and just float down the river and let the current take us. But no, we know better. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to flip the canoe and try to swim because we know better. I mean, it's, and then we're drowning over and over again because we think we know so much better. And, it's a reality check when you go through something and you see an animal pass. It makes you think about all the things in your life that you didn't handle so great and how beautifully animals handle things like that. Even just sometimes the going away, right? Like the indigenous people did. When you knew it was your time, you just went out into the forest and you just went. You didn't, you know, scream and yell. And, you know, I had this grandfather. I can't believe I'm telling this story on the radio, but he took longer to die than he lived. And he insisted on being at home. So, of course, my grandmother took so long taking care of him that right after he passed, she passed because she was exhausted, even though she was like 15 years younger than him. And he spent months and months and months screaming at whoever he was screaming at in the beyond about all these things that he was being told he did and how all of them were, quote unquote, a rotten, filthy lie, and he never did any of those things. And that is not a peaceful passing. Peaceful passing. Whoops, that was weird. That was not a peaceful passing. That is not a settled person. That's a crazy thing. My mom used to always say, oh, my God, he's screaming at St. Peter, and she would laugh. Because it went on and on, and there was a list. So there were a lot of things he supposedly didn't do. Now, whether that was actually somebody from the beyond having a chat with him or whether it was just him trying to reconcile things consciously with himself before he passed, there was a laundry list. But with animals and their consciousness, they're sort of just dealing with things as they go and staying very plugged into spirit. So they're just kind of, when they go, they're just kind of like bloop, and then they're gone. And I mean, it's such a humbling thing to see that and to think about that. And I certainly never thought I was going to talk about that today. Wow, human beings, we need to figure it out because we're in the middle of a pandemic that has killed millions of us, and we're still killing each other. You know, why wait for COVID to do it? Let's just do it now. I mean, you know, it's fascinating to me, and I know that you and I think, as a matter of fact, you did the show at the beginning of 2017 because I remember we were both really gobsmacked from what was going on post-election.
Yeah, no, I had just hit a sort of soul weariness that made it just that honestly inspired me to retreat from a lot of social media stuff and a lot of interviews for a while because it was just a sense of helplessness in seeing people just consistently making these horrible decisions when you knew, like, many of them really should know better. And just knowing the trajectory we were inevitably on, it didn't have to be psychic to know that that was going to end very poorly.
Right. No, you're right. And, you know, I started the movement really on the day the election and results were announced, not because of that, but because it was my mother's birthday and I was planning to do something to honor her. And when the country exploded, Spirit was like, guess what? It's this. So I was bringing people. Then I started the show 2 months later. So I was starting bringing people onto the show while everybody was still very raw. And I was bringing on friends that were on the conservative side and friends that were on the liberal side. And even though the purpose of the show was to discuss peace, love, kindness, and unity and not politics, people were still bell rung. And I remember, I think maybe my second show was our mutual friend Chip Coffee. And I remember Chip saying to me, I can't promise you I'm going to be nice. And I said, I don't need you to be nice. I just need you to be honest and speak from your soul. And I remember even with you when I had you, I remember you kind of saying something like, you know, this is a rough time and I'm going through it. And I'm like, but that's what people need to see. People need to see that people like us who are used to sort of always putting our brave face on to help other people. And I think we talked about this when you were on Haunted Playground last month a little bit, that for us, right, our lives are helping people and being in service, but we're also both having human lives and trying to get our stuff together and trying to progress and evolve, because obviously if we were perfect, we wouldn't be stuck back here in the meat costume. So it's, you know, we are here to help and inspire others to get through tough times, but we're also people and we're dealing with stuff ourselves. And I think it's really important for listeners or viewers or readers or whatever the medium is, for folks to know that we go through stuff too, that we're not always like, you know, in a yoga position hovering over a lily pad in paradise, that, you know, we struggle as well.
Well, yeah, I'd get bored if I was, you know, floating and just meditating the whole time, because I come back to flesh, because there's always things to learn, but there's certain things that you can only do from this side. And some of that is inspiring people, and some of that is talking to people, and some of that is living in a way that is an example that honestly has bigger ripples than any kind of, you know, religion or you know, vast movement.
Sure.
You know, just,
of course. And donuts. I mean, it's really worth coming back just for that alone, isn't it? Sex and donuts. I mean, it's like, I'm the most unenlightened person, but I do think there are things that you learn being in a body that maybe you wouldn't learn at home. I mean, learning how to deal with pain, right? Physical pain, emotional pain. These are all things that we grow through the challenges of learning. And we grow through the experience of having a tangible thing, of actually having senses and having to see with eyes and hear with ears and feel with fingers. And I think it's wonderful. And people go, I'm never coming back. This is my last time. And I always think, oh, wow, I can't wait to come back already. I'm not even dead yet.
I've got a story about that with my mom. My mom passed of breast cancer complications back in 2004, 2005. So quite some time ago. Like your father, it was like, it took her 13 years. It was just like, she had 6 months to live for nearly 13 years. It was kind of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She espoused this belief that was popular in her hippie days, that where you were born on the zodiac determined what cycle of life you were in. And since she was a Pisces, she was like at the very end, so she was ascending and she wasn't going to come back. And she was really sure. She's like, I'm so done. Like she had a pretty tough life. And she's like, I'm not going to come back. I'm done with incarnating. Like I've paid my dues. And you know, when she did pass, she appeared to me very stereotypically, like only my mom would do the whole, like, I'm, you know, bathed in rays of light and ha, here I am. And then it was,
right.
Yeah, I mean, because I believe some of that, some of the way that you present yourself is a choice. Is like, you know, you yourself are kind of dressing
Absolutely.
Up in a little bit of that.
Sure.
There was a point where, you know, I wasn't really thinking about, you know, mom or friends who were having babies, incarnation, anything like that. And I had this dream out of the blue, where my mom is in a hotel room. And I do, for the record, a lot of dream work. So I put a lot of work over, you know, decades telling the difference between a paranormal psychic dream and just my very vivid imagination telling me something fun that night. And you know, all of these things happen. And this one had the feel of being real, but it was just, I couldn't in the moment quite sort out what was going on. She was in this tiny hotel room. And she kept telling me that I needed to go out and talk to the management because she was supposed to be getting out, and she'd been cooped up in here for a while, but there were apparently complications, and maybe she wasn't going to be able to leave at all. And she really wanted to, like, get out of this tiny little hotel room. So she's just sitting there in the bed. And, you know, whoever the management feels like more than just you know, people in a way that I've also encountered in both dream space and visionary space. So I go out because she can't leave. Like, she can't move out of the space. I can't. I go and I'm like, there's a couple of being people that sort of look vaguely like, you know, we're putting on doctor suits for the purpose of this engagement. And I'm like, okay, so what's the deal? And they're like, well, it, you know, we were expecting things to work out fine, only it seems like there might be some medical complications. And I'm like, what do medical complications have to do with her leaving a hotel room? Okay, so that dream happens, and I wake up, and I write it down. I'm like, well, that's weird. And then a friend calls up and wants me to come to the hospital because his wife is having a baby, and everything looked like it was fine. And suddenly there were complications, and they weren't sure that she was going to deliver the baby live or be okay herself. So they wanted me to come and do some energy work and help with the baby coming out, which I went and did, and did some healing stuff afterwards. And this infant, not even a day old, lifts its head in a way that you would not expect an infant that old to do. Like it's actually like craning and fixed on me, like fixated on me in this room. The grandmother, who I'd never met before, of this child, looks at the kid, looks at me, and goes, oh, they know you. At which point I'm like, oh, hi, Mom. I guess that didn't work out for you, huh? And I'm as certain as I get that this child was my mom getting sucked back into the cycle because she wasn't as done as she thought she was.
Right.
But just the whole experience of I'm in this tiny hotel room and there's complications. I'd really like to get out. Like it was pretty wild.
Yeah.
I've kept contact with them. It's my personal role because I do a lot. I believe in reincarnation. I do a lot of work with reincarnation. It's my personal role for a child, especially. You do not tell them who you think they are. You wait if they remember and they approach you. You share, yeah. You answer any question that they can ask, but it's, you are infringing upon their journey if you define their lives for them.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. But you know this child in the three-dimensional world now?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I occasionally we'll randomly bump into one another. And sometimes in the most unusual times where it's like pre-pandemic, the mother and father, there was some complications. And so I wasn't sure which parent the kid was staying with anymore for a little while and just wandered into a random shopping place, bopped into the dad, bopped into the kid. And we're like, oh, hey, how you doing? Hi.
Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting. And it's interesting to see
fantastic.
Certain personality traits come through no matter what, and kind of certain almost karmic choices, because my mom had come from a divorced family, and there were a couple of similar familial situations that played out too. So I'm pretty sure she really wasn't done with that lesson. Pretty neat.
That's interesting. Yeah, my mom is still in spirit. She keeps laughing always and telling me not coming back. And interestingly, like your mom, my mom was into numerology even more than astrology. And she believed because she was a 9, and that's the completion, that she was done, never had to come back. So the same thing. She would always say, I'm a 9. I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. I'm done. I'm a 9. And then I would always laugh and say, but I'm an 11 and I came back. And then she'd say, well, that's your fault because you wanted to come back. But that was
the point where there's a choice. Like, we can make a choice to come back and continue to work and kind of be down in the trenches.
Of course.
There's good points about that.
I was in a session once, and this being, literally, was being channeled through this person. This being looked at me and said, you. And I looked around and said, me or you, everybody? And it said, you. And it pointed at me and it said, we keep telling you, you don't have to come back, but you always keep coming back. And everybody in this group is looking around like, what's going on? And I'm like, yeah, I do. That's true. I know. Every time. I can't help it. I'm thinking about the next time already. But an interesting story. My father, who like my grandfather, who was the story I was telling earlier in the show, who was my father's father, in that family, nobody passes like a kitten. He had brain cancer, so they did a surgery and took out enough of his brain that he knew some things, like he knew his name, and he could walk a little, he could eat, but he couldn't write or read or anything, and he didn't live for very long. He died of a septic bladder infection maybe 2 months after he was diagnosed, which was probably a godsend. But one day he had gotten taken to the ICU because his blood pressure was low, and we went over there to see him, and an interesting story. So he was alive still, but he was a little loopy, right, because of the surgery, and he was a little in and out of it, and he said, what am I going to do to get out of here? And my mom said, what are you talking about? He said, I've been sitting in this cab forever. What does a guy have to do to get out of here? So I guess my dad, being a New Yorker, in his mind, like, he was in a cab, and the cab just wasn't moving. And about a month after it happened, he was still alive. My best friend is a nurse, and she was actually in I told her the story, and she said, oh, that's the whole thing. There's a guy who was a hospice nurse, and apparently he's written a bunch of books about death and dying. And one of the things in there is that oftentimes when people are transitioning, they imagine themselves stuck in traffic. And to them, they're in a vehicle and nothing's moving. So
no, it makes
I always
sense.
Thought that was such a,
and like the
such
hotel
a strange
room for my
thing.
Mom made sense.
Right, that's how he saw it. But at one point, my father and his family, he had punched an EMT while they were trying to transfer him somewhere, and they put him in a psych hold. So he's had the brain cancer, right, and he's basically waiting to die, but now he's a little out there, which he always was, but he hid it well. And my mom calls him, talks to him at the hospital. They wouldn't let him have visitors because he had MRSA. But they would let her talk to him on the phone. And she asked him what he was doing, and he said, I'm hovering in the stratosphere. And she said, okay, well, I'm going to come and see you. And he said, but you won't see me because you're in the stratosphere where you are, and I'm in the stratosphere over China. And this is a man who could barely put two sentences together after the surgery. And my mom said, well, what are you doing in China? He said, I'm waiting to be born. I'm supposed to be born into a little boy. And my father was an engineer, kind of hated people. About all he loved was engineering, and he was very, very good at it. And he said, they need me to develop a water system. China's going to develop a water system to take over the world, and I'm going to help design it. But I have to be born first. So my mom's holding her hand over the phone, and she's like, you're not going to believe this. So out of the psych hold, they put him in a more security nursing home where there's better security. And she goes to see him, and he's talking about something, and mostly just babbling in a couple words. And she says, so whatever happened with China? Because she is, like, fascinated. And he looked at her completely lucid, and he said, the plans changed. They decided to use somebody else. China's off. So I don't know if maybe that kid had to be born, and he just didn't die fast enough. I don't know. And this is a man that was a stone-cold atheist, as only a lapsed Catholic can be. I mean, he didn't believe in anything. He didn't even really believe in humanity. I mean, he really liked robots and was hoping robots would take over the world someday. So, but yeah, I guess China was off, and he was no longer going to design that water system. But isn't that interesting for somebody who, I don't even know that my father knew what reincarnation was. I mean, he was so uninterested in anything that had to do with spirituality of any kind. And for him to say that to her and then the rest of the time, then he would just go back to kind of saying like his name and, oh, pretty flower. He would say magnolia a lot, magnolias, magnolias. He talked a lot about magnolias. When they asked him if he was lucid enough to make the decision to have radiation, he said magnolias. They were like, nope. So then these lucid thoughts would come out, and that was one of them about him hovering in the stratosphere, as he said, over China. Very, very bizarre. But anyway, it's interesting, right? The the way that we are constantly touching the spiritual world, even when we don't believe we are. It's like it's existing right here with us at the same time that we're existing. But, and I don't know why we fight our better nature so much, because I really believe, like I said earlier, if we tapped more into that and we raised up our essence more, it would take us away from that thinking of violence and hatred and anger and selfishness and greed and, you know, all that bad stuff that none of us really need, but that we think we do because we get stuck too much in the three dimensions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's funny because we even develop language to distance ourselves from the mystical aspect of it, but to still describe these regular experiences we have. You know, we talk about, you know, we don't like the feel of a person. They have bad vibes. We don't like the energy of a house or a space. And when most people use that, they're not talking about energy in a vibrational sense or energy in a metaphysical sense. But certainly they don't think about it. I remember years ago in the Stone Age, I was in a community theater for a production of Salome, and the director had everybody doing these exercises that were basically energy work. I mean, like, she Sure. was teaching everyone how to read the energy of the audience, how to work with the energy of the audience, how to take the attention of that energy, the energy of that attention, and to sort of like cycle it into the performance to sort of like power you through the 2-3 hours of being on the boards and kind of going through this kind of physically grueling experience. And at no point did anybody learning that like stop, step back and go, huh, this is magic. like I'm literally learning magic. You know, I, as an energy worker, I'm like looking around going, nope, this seems, these folks think that this is just normal thespian stuff. Got it. And it probably is.
Right.
And
yeah.
Yet, like, nobody stopped to think about like the deeper metaphysical implications that if you can feel what the audience wants or needs in the moment, without asking them, if you can read that while you are immersed in the energy of a performance, what else can you do?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Well, and I talk about this all the time, that when you are acting, and you kind of set up my next question perfectly, which I'll ask you in a second. When you are acting, you're standing on stage, right, and you're waiting for the curtain to go up, and you think, how the hell are we ever going to do this? I'm going to forget my line. Someone's going to forget their line. A light's going to fall on somebody's head. This is all too crazy. And you literally blink your eyes, and the curtain's going down, and you're done. And you're like, I have no idea what just happened. I think that is, there is a very, very intensely pure connection with spirit when you create. And what I was going to ask you was, when you said the thing about being an actor, why it is that you think that so many spiritual people, so many psychics are also artists, particularly performing artists and kind of specifically actors. Like, a lot that I know started out that way. I know why I think, but why do you think it is that there's such a correlation between light workers and an artist?
I mean, some of it is the energy, and some of it is bringing things into being, and some of it is even the writer and creator sorts that I know who don't necessarily think of themselves as magical, metaphysical, or psychic will talk about getting into the zone as if they are channeling something, as if they're in this trance state, and this sort of purer, deeper consciousness is pouring out either on the page or in their music or in their art. And I think there's a couple of things going on there. I mean, there's, you know, right brain, left brain concepts, although I think we need to rethink that modality, because the binary approach doesn't quite suit us. We need to have much more, well, I think we have a much more unified brain than we give ourselves credit for. But
I agree.
But I do think creatives live a little bit more in their dreaming mind than they do in their narrow to detail, practical, focused, physical world mind.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Yeah, and my answer would be that we already know how to tap into the channel, because we tap mm-hmm. into the channel for art. And it's the same channel. It's the same exact channel. You're just tapping into it for something different. in the way that, you know, you can use your blender to make pesto or to make a smoothie. It's still your blender and you're still using it. And I think whether you're bringing through creativity for a book or creativity for an acting role or creativity for dance, or whether you're bringing it through for psychic channeling, mediumship, whatever it is, it's the exact same channel. You're just using it for something else.
It's still also magic. Like, it's still also truth. We have...
Absolutely.
You know, somewhere in the course of the age of reason and all of that stuff, we started to divorce ourselves from the meaning of dreams and the meaning of art, and to see that as, you know, it's all quite useless, and it's not practical, and it's not real in a factual, you can measure it in a petri dish and a beaker sort of way. And yet,
right.
that undermines the fact that there are profound truths that can be expressed through fictions, through myths, through stories, that a person can pick up a character and embody them, and in that fiction of a character also reveal a profound truth. And in some cases, you are more free to reveal it clearly, without any pretense, when you do it under the guise of acting, of storytelling.
I agree. And I think that there's so many messages, spiritual messages, that it's much easier for people to pick up from a play or a fictional novel or a film than it is for people to actually sit down and think about without having their minds blown. There's something about seeing it played out in front of you with fictional characters that somehow, hey, so you can investigate the concepts and the ideologies of what's being told without having to feel so much pressure that it's from your own life. You know what I mean? That you have to actually make that decision for yourself. And I think that it's interesting because I do believe in collective unconscious, that oftentimes when there are things, Michelle, from a spiritual perspective that I really feel the world needs to know about, ideas about things, suddenly you'll start to see them crop up in TV shows and books and movies and in video games. And I really believe it's because it's sort of a way of getting the world ready for the idea that this is the next thing we need to be thinking about. And it does. It opens up society to entertain a lot of those ideas, right?
Yeah. No, I've seen that phenomenon. And actually, the first place I read about someone kind of expressing it and acknowledging that was real was in Stephen King's work, where there was
yes.
You know, noting that there were certain times where it was just the time for this idea to pop up. And I believe he used the example of probably calculus with Isaac Newton. Like there was a bit of a kerfluffle where there was a competing scientist and there was some thought that they had stolen one or the other from the other. And, you know, it was pretty clear that neither of them had actually conferred or been able to have access to one another's writings, but they basically developed the same stuff at the same time, which it's not the only time where that's happened with, you know, not simply, you know, artistic ideas, but like profound concepts. And then suddenly it's time for this piece of information to show up in reality. It's also a good argument for the collective unconscious. I don't remember the name of the paper, it was like an anthropological, I read it in my psych books in college, and it was about this species of monkeys, and a number of different, like, groups of them lived on these islands. The monkeys could not move from island to island, which is kind of important to the story, because there was a certain type of fruit that was inedible unless you washed it a certain way. And the monkeys on one island were taught how to do that. And within, like, days of that happening, the monkeys on the other island figured it out. Like it sort of spread among the population. And this was, you know, presented as one of the decent arguments for, hey, collective unconscious is something that beings, you know, share. Like there's some unspoken, you know, nonverbal, physical interaction way in which species can communicate.
I agree. And I'm with you 100%. Yes, and you are right. And it's like sometimes when I'm thinking about something that I think is so spiritually out there and everybody's going to think I'm crazy, suddenly within the next year I'll watch, you know, two or three different films, television shows, a combination of both, and it's the same kind of concepts. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's something that's rumbling around people's collective unconscious right now. And the best way to deal with it is to write. And I think sometimes writers know what they're doing. I think Stephen King certainly does, because I think he's highly intelligent, and I think strong level of psychic activity with him, although I don't know that he would admit that about himself, but I believe definitely. But I think a lot of times writers just go, oh, I just got this really great idea. They don't even realize they've kind of tapped into the everything to get it, you know?
Yeah, no, there's definitely cases where that, but I will say, having had the privilege and the pleasure of being able to meet a couple of my, the people that I looked up to because I read their fiction, and I was like, I think that there's like some real stuff, like I think they know what they're doing with this. I think that there's some truth here. And, you know, finding that, you know, for various personal reasons, they don't feel comfortable just shouting it to the world. And in some cases, it was just that their agents, especially back in the day, said, just don't do this. Don't talk about it. Hi, Bliss.
Right. Kitty.
But they very much were like, oh, yeah, yeah, I practice this. This is something that I know. I've had multiple experiences with it. And I feel it's important to share it, at least in my fiction, if nowhere else.
Right, exactly, yeah. And I think that's how ideas get shared. I think when you do that, when you write, you consciously know what you're doing because you already have that awareness that you tap into the channel and that something is being given to you as a message to put into a book. But I think sometimes a lot of people just think, oh, my God, I got this idea. I'm going to sell a screenplay, make $1 million. And they don't realize that it's just been handed to them. In the same way that I think people every day do spiritual things and deliver messages from spirit, not knowing that's what they're doing. They just think, I had an idea in my head, you know?
Well, and the trick is just when you get an intuition to go talk to someone or to call them up or to have a conversation, allowing yourself the freedom to act on it without thinking too hard about it, picking it apart, like asking yourself, why do I have a right to do this? Or like, what's going on with that? And I don't mean like just assaulting someone with like, I think you're going to die tomorrow, because that's not what I'm talking about. But like, if you suddenly have an impulse to like call a friend and check in on what's going on with them, like there's a reason for that.
Absolutely. There's a reason for that. 100%. Yeah, you're completely right. Yeah. And I think that that's part also of raising your vibration is tapping into and identifying the fact that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and allow and trust the messages that are coming in for you, that they are for you, and to listen to them. I think that's so unbelievably important that we do that, because we are being given messages for a reason all the time, whether it's, oh, you should pick up the phone and call your sister, or it's, you know what, whoop, I don't feel like I should cross that crosswalk right now, and then a bus isn't watching and flies by. You know what I mean? All these different things where we are literally being guided all day long for the betterment of our existence, so that we have better lives, so that people around us have better lives, so that, you know, spirit is not angry or mad or playing a game with you, or, you know, you are in soul school, but you're not in some kind of twisted rat maze, although sometimes it feels like you are. You know, spirit really wants us to have the best possible life we can have, to overcoming obstacles. But we have to believe that. And part of that is just, you know, turning on your psychic ear and listening, right?
Certainly paying attention and being open, and also acknowledging that when those messages guide you to interact with another person, you have a responsibility to get their consent, because just because you're ready for something doesn't necessarily mean that they are.
Yeah.
So I don't know, it's sometimes difficult to navigate where I have a profound, I profoundly honor the right of each being to pursue their path in their own time. And sometimes it's easy to get impatient with that. but consent is important to like make sure like, okay, here I have a message for you. Are you okay hearing it? Like, are you in a place to hear this? Are you in a place to engage with me about this? Because the one thing I've seen as a downside with that, because I've definitely seen, you know, well-meaning psychics like walk up to someone and be like, your dead parent is talking to me and have this message. And even if it's genuinely a message that they've received, if the person they're talking to isn't ready for that, what you've actually now done is given them enough of a shocking, unpleasant experience that they will regress. They will go backwards and kind of push back against any bit of this happening again for them. Like they will actually turn against it, which is why like learning those boundaries, learning to recognize those boundaries, honoring them, and getting people's ideally knowledgeable consent is really important when you're doing this work.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely true. Yeah. I've never understood the thrill. I think it's just an ego thing, right? Of walking into a place and deciding, I'm going to walk up to this lady who's buying a melon and tell her, you know what, you're going to die in a year. I never have understood this. That's one thing I don't understand. There's a couple things, right? Let's talk about things we don't understand with psychics. Here we go. That is one, because who asked you? Maybe it's just me being a nice girl from Connecticut and my Irish mother raising me with all this, you know, the Scorpio, my Irish Scorpio mother and boundaries. Like, don't step on people's boundaries. It's always her big thing. Don't invade people's private space. That's one. Number two is psychics to tell you when you're going to die or when somebody's going to die. Because I don't know about you, but first of all, I don't want to know. Secondly, every message I've ever received from spirit is none of your business and don't you dare tell them anything because it's none of their business. And then I also have a thing with people who walk into a haunted place and decide, I'm going to cross everybody over. Well, who asked you? You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness.
That was kind of obnoxious.
Yeah, no, that is a huge pet peeve of mine. Huge. I mean, never mind the presumption that you not only have the ability but the right to...
Yes.
Like I said, I have a profound respect and honor for each being's path in their own time, and that extends not only to the people who are wearing skin suits, but all of the other folk, too. Like, I think part of that whole crossing over, actually the way people treat spirits in general, especially, heaven help us, on reality TV, and this is me speaking as someone on reality TV.
Exactly, right, okay. A nice disclaimer, but I'm glad you said that.
Well, for some of them, it seems like it's coming from a place where, like, I think that they don't actually believe that ghosts are real. Like, they can't. Because even though they're investigating them, all they do is they go in and they start shouting at them. They don't treat them like they're real people.
They certainly
don't treat them the way that they would a living person in the room. They berate them, they beat them, they ask them to relive their trauma for sensationalism and, you know, it treat them... As objects, as chattel, it's horrible. And it's not everybody in paranormal reality TV, but there's certainly a stream of it where, and then it perpetuates it for people who watch, who then it normalizes that behavior of A, either being a bully to the dead or going in all high and mighty and righteous and like, I am opening a portal to the other world, and never mind that you have a process of your own to get through. Boop, off you go.
Exactly. That'd be like if you went to a party and you walked in the door and said, okay, you leave, you get out. I'm sorry, party's over for you, leave. I mean, who asked you? You show up at a party, start telling people to leave? I mean, I think it's all the ego, and I think that ego is another thing, and I think it's part of the us versus them to a lesser degree that is continually the downfall of humanity. This idea that look at me and look what I can do, and it's wow. Oh, okay. I mean, it's. I mean, I could probably talk a kid out of their lunch money, but I shouldn't do that. I mean, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And I don't believe they're crossing anybody over because the spirit's just going to come back. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not like you evict them or you get a restraining order against them and they're not allowed to come back. They're just going to say, okay, and they're going to go away till you're gone, and then they're going to come back because they're smarter than you.
Well, and I've also seen people where it is my opinion very strongly that they were lying to themselves about the effectiveness of what they were doing. Like they were trying to prove something to themselves, and it was coming from ego in one direction or the other. And by my perception as somebody who sees stuff like that, there's just, you know, a bunch of dead people standing around going, is that guy for real? Like what's
right.
going on there? And I'm like, just let them, like they'll figure it out. Or they won't.
Exactly. Ugh, it's this bozo again. Do you know what I mean? Comes here every Saturday
yeah.
night with a group of people and crosses me over. I mean, they must just be laughing. No, I agree with you. And some people are so into that. Like, you have to go and you have to immediately cross over all the spirits. It's like, so why? They're not hurting anybody. Why are we doing that?
Let them be. Like, maybe they want to be there. Certainly not every spirit that's lingering is earthbound and basically in some
right.
sort of weird suffering limbo. Like, they're there for a reason. Sometimes that reason is they've got stuff to work out and it takes them a little while, and that's okay. Like, that's their right.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And from seeing your loved ones and from the, you know, the relationship I've had with my mom since she passed, and I've been very fortunate not to know that many people who passed before my mom passed. She was kind of the first one that I was really close to that came back all the time. Yeah, they come and go as they want. Just because, like you said, just because somebody's hanging out in the Tower of London doesn't mean that they're there every second of every day and they're stuck. And oftentimes when you do see that kind of a traumatic imprint, right, the white lady moaning as she walks up the stairs, That's not even a sentient spirit. That's just a residual haunting. It's just a little energy that's left over of some trauma somebody experienced. So, right. It's not even, it's the Civil War guys pushing the cannon up and down the field in Gettysburg at 2 a.m. every night. That is not a spirit, and it certainly isn't trapped there. And you cannot cross it over because it's just an energetic thumbprint. So, that's even more ridiculous. I'm going to cross over this gray lady on the freeway. Well, good luck. All right.
Yeah.
Good on you. Yeah, it's a hard one. And it's even harder with the living people, I think, when running up to somebody in the grocery store. And it also, you know, it's trained people badly to think that being a light worker is that kind of consistent dog and pony show. That there have been very few occasions where I've had clients that were like, okay, there's three things on my dresser. Can you tell me what they are? Well, really? Okay.
No.
You know?
Go away.
Right.
If you need that type of proof, go seeking it somewhere else, please.
That's what you're using your time for? Kind of like, here's a throwback story. Another story. When I was at that channeling session that I spoke about, when the thing said, you just keep coming back, this woman channels this being, right? And it looked like she was giving birth to it. Like, it was painful. The being finally comes through. And I mean, it sounds like nothing I've ever heard with my ears before. And it asks for, it gives a little message about, you know, things celestial beings talk about, you know, be good to each other. Basically, don't be a dick. And then it asks for questions. And these idiots in the circle, like, you have a chance to speak to a being. And they're like, are we going to get a TV show this year? And I thought, oh, my God, I have never been so embarrassed in front of a spirit in my life. I was like, oh, my, well, not a spirit, but a being. I'm like, oh, my God, that's the question you want to know? Like, you can ask anything about the universe, and you want to know, am I going to get a TV show? Like, that's when there should have been a giant red X that just went, meh, fail, and they would have ejected under the sky. Yeah, so...
Wow.
To take your time with a light worker and what you want to know in that time is, oh, I've got to put three things on my dresser and I covered them up with a dish towel. Can you tell me what they are and what color dish towels they're under? That's what you need to know. So I think that sometimes that's another part of the collective unconscious, right? It's pulling ourselves out of that really low vibrational thinking and moving ourselves into something that's a little more expansive and is actually going to help us along the way.
Yeah.
Not that we don't have to know.
I'm completely derailed by the, are we going to get a TV show? Like,
right?
Spirit's eyes must have rolled so hard it saw its own ass.
Right? And there was this pause. It just paused, this off-world being. It paused, and then it went right to somebody else. It never answered the question. It took a minute. It almost took like a spit take. Like, it took a minute, and then it went right to somebody else. Like, I don't even answer questions. Talk to the hand. I don't answer questions that are like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta love humans, right? And on that, we're completely out of time. Boy, our time does fly, but come back and let's do this again.
All right.
Where can people find you, my friend, and find out all about you, your books, and the whole thing?
MichelleBellinger.com, spelled Belanger for anybody in the U.S., is pretty much the hub for everything. If you want to learn, get classes and stuff from me, Patreon.com/haunted. So that's a pretty easy one to remember if you can't spell my name. And every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern Central Time on my Facebook fan page and on my YouTube and on my Instagram, I go live with a 10 to 15 minute guided meditation on connecting across distance and boundary and introducing people to the way in which we're connected with energy. It's called the Connection Ritual, and I've been doing it since the start of the pandemic as a way of building community and helping people learn how to do remote work.
That's fantastic. And how did you luck out to get haunted? I mean, you were in there early.
I was like, let's see if this exists. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm parking that. I'm not even sure I'm doing anything with Patreon, but okay, this is mine now.
That is fantastic. You're amazing, my friend, and I so appreciate you. And I would love for you to come back and do this again. So let's do something soon together. I'd love it.
Okay. You take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you. The wonderful Michelle Bellinger, everybody. Go check her out because she's fantastic. If you missed anything that she talked about, anything we talked about, you want to get in contact with me, the best way, I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. It's SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. Also the show at Haunted, Raising the Vibration Radio.com, LiveParanormal.com. That's another way to get a hold. And also, it's really important that we all reach out and stay in touch right now. We're in a weird place and a weird time. And I think it's just so important that we stay connected. So find me on social media. I'm at Sheena Metal everywhere. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Twitter. I'm on YouTube. Direct message me or email me, Sheena@IamRaisingYourVibration.com, or text me. I'll give you my phone number right now, 818-437-0886. It is so important that we stay in touch. It is so important that we reach out to each other. It's so important that we find a way to get past this altogether and to raise our collective vibrations. Until I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always try to ascend, evolve, and inspire whenever possible. Please do those things. Again, if you want to book a private session with me, text me. If you want to just text me and stay in touch with me so that you know that everything is going to be okay, I'm here to reassure you. 818-437-0886. Thank you to Live Paranormal, an honor to be part of your family. We're always on the Live Paranormal Radio Network every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific Time at liveparanormal.com. Also look for us in our syndicates, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, Podomatic. There's so many, I can't mention them all right now, but that'll get you started if you want to check out the archives. And I'm here on Wednesdays at 6 o'clock Pacific Time doing my Haunted Playground show. Take care of yourselves. All will be well. And I am here for when you need me. You come and find me. This is Raising the Vibration every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. Check us out at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, LiveParanormal.com. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I'll see you next week. Bye, all.
Okay. Thank you. Always a good time.
You're You're very welcome, my friend. I'll see you next time. Take care.
All right. Yep. You too. Take care.